Hello, and welcome to the Career Compass program, which includes online learning sessions, podcasts, videos, webinars, white papers, and whiteboard videos, all specifically designed for NAVFAC. Please check the Career Compass Resource Center, CCRC, often for updates and new content to support your learning. This content will assist with learning and development within the 20 non-technical competencies outlined in the Workforce Development Strategy. Today's topic is interpersonal communications in support of the Communicating for Results competency. The objectives of this particular podcast include identifying common mistakes in dealing with people, understanding best approaches for managing interpersonal skills, and implementing the best practices for interpersonal communications. So let's jump in. What is interpersonal communications, Anne?
So interpersonal communication, it's just a fancy way of saying an exchange of information between two or more people. So I'm giving information to you or I'm receiving information from you, and we're just exchanging information.
So the interaction that you're describing for just that communication, what would be some of the benefits of that?
So many benefits, Jeffrey. So first of all, think about not just NAVFAC, not just the work, but also think about your family, your community, your place of worship, right? We're always exchanging information. So this podcast absolutely will help you at NAVFAC regardless of your position. It will also help you just as a life skill. So some of the benefits is being able to build relationships, to achieve goals through others, with others, and also to understand what we call the verbal and the nonverbal cues. Now, Jeffrey, you and I are actually not seeing each other right now because we're on a podcast. However, there's a lot I can tell about you based on the cadence, which is how fast you're speaking, based on the tonality, is your voice going up or down? All of that information, even if I can't see you, gives me cues, which then helps me build and strengthen the relationships as I'm exchanging information.
Nice. So I like the benefits. Now, conversely, are there any challenges that we need to understand as well?
Lots of challenges, right? Because we're dealing with people and people are different and complex and come from different backgrounds. One of the first challenges I would say is technology. I love technology. I'm a big fan of using it. And sometimes it gets in the way. Sometimes, whether it's literally the hard drive, the software, not being able to get online to see each other, that can get in the way. Also, you lose a little bit of that humanity sometimes in a text or an IM chat that you would get if you were able to hear the person's voice. So that's probably the first challenge. Mm-hmm. The second challenge is just the skill of having communications with people. People say, oh, but everybody knows how to do that. And that is absolutely not true. We are all shaped by how we grew up, our families, our societal norms, our institutions such as education, places of worship, and that shapes us. And so some people have learned different ways depending where you are in the world, where you are in the country. What is the quote proper way to say hello? Do you shake hands? Do you look someone in the eye? That all is nuanced. And so just the skill set of doing that at work can sometimes be a challenge as well. And I'd say the third challenge of interpersonal communications, besides technology and aptitude, is our own bias. Now, when I say the word bias, sometimes people get a little confused and like, bias, isn't that a bad thing? Mm-hmm. Absolutely not. Bias is just a preference. However, when we make sure that our preference is being done and used by everybody else around us, that's where we get into trouble. So for example, if I prefer to see things on a video rather than listen to a podcast, and I insist that everybody else sees that video, I'm not taking into account the interpersonal communications of how other people prefer to learn.
Thank you for that. I really enjoyed the fact of you sharing that information and insights. If you had to put a point to it with one or two things that most people do, what would you say are the two biggest common mistakes of interpersonal communications?
There's probably two, and they're really about how does someone think and how is someone motivated? And the underlying theme to both of those is that we assume we know what motivates the other person or what the other person is thinking. And we don't. No matter how well you know someone, we don't. And so it is common for us to say, well, I prefer to use visuals, just like I gave in that example, and then to ask everybody else to do that. And that doesn't work. And it can actually start to break down those interpersonal communications. or I am motivated by the same thing. Some people are motivated by financials. Some people are motivated by opportunities for growth. Who knows what motivates them? And for me to assume I know what motivates you could actually break down that interpersonal communication if I don't just ask first.
Thank you. Along that lines, when we're working with different classifications of employees, for an example, a general schedule employee, which is typically referred to as a white collar employee, versus a wage grade technical person who's sometimes labeled as a blue collar employee, would there be differences that you would want to note when it comes to dealing with that type of workforce?
There are no differences in how you approach someone with humanity, with respect, with dignity. There might be a difference in the type of conversation. A wage grade employee might be a bit more of the technical in terms of what you're actually doing based on your job. Mm-hmm. So there might be more of a technical aspect to the conversation, more technical language. However, it is still important to make sure that you are focusing on the person, that you're listening to them, and that you are treating them with respect the way you would with any other person.
Thank you. Are there any best practices that you would want to highlight right now since we've talked about benefits and challenges and just overall common mistakes?
I would say a best practice for really starting to get into this competency of interpersonal communications and really starting to use it is something that we call emotional intelligence. Again, another mouthful. And all emotional intelligence is the ability of someone to understand what they're feeling and how to manage that within other people, a circle of people, and then also within the larger room. There's four aspects of emotional intelligence. The first is self-awareness. What's going on with Anne? How is she feeling today? And then the second aspect is what we call self-management. Am I able to manage my emotions? Happy, sad, angry, frustrated, overwhelmed, or am I putting it on those around me? So that's mm-hmm. the first thing is the self part. And then especially with interpersonal communications competency is the social part. So it's social awareness. How is Jeffrey feeling today? How is Anita feeling today? And then being able to help manage that as well. Mm-hmm. And so emotional intelligence is really just understanding what's going on with you and those around you. And it feels like it is difficult. It just takes practice, just like any other technical skill. And when you really start to focus on those four quadrants, it really will help you with this competency.
Thank you. That reminds me of something that I used to deal with back when I was in school, was called a Johari window, where it allows you to identify the strengths of yourself, identify also your weaknesses, but then it also outlines for you some of the blind spots that we have. We might not know that we have a bias, as you stated earlier, to something. We're just seeing it as a preference. But if we don't understand that it's there, it's hard to work around that, especially in the workplace. So with that understanding, is there a science or anything around EQ? Is it specific? Can anybody use it?
Anybody can use it. That's the great thing about it. You can actually grow and do practices to improve it on a regular basis. The science of it is fascinating. Mm-hmm. And so what it is that there's something in our brain called the amygdala. And the amygdala triggers the fight, flight, or freeze mode. And so what happens is when our body senses danger, it goes danger, 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 and it starts to trigger the amygdala so that our amygdala says either I'm going to fight, I'm going to run, i.e. flee, or I'm going to freeze.
Okay.
When that happens, the fascinating part is it actually triggers or hijacks our frontal cortex, which is the part of our brain that makes decisions. So our body senses danger, and what happens is our oxygen flows to our extremities so that we can run or fight or whatever the case may be, which is great. And we can do what we need to do to escape the moment of danger. The downside is, as I mentioned, the frontal cortex, that's the place that makes our decisions. When our fight, flight, or freeze is triggered by the amygdala, we literally, Jeffrey, cannot make a decision. And we start to act based on that, such as, Jeffrey, I told you this is the way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, whoa, what just happened to Jeffrey? Well, Jeffrey just had an amygdala hijack. And so what we want to do is in the moments where there is danger, yes, we want that to happen. However, our brain doesn't know the difference between a real robbery or a real house on fire and 10 meetings back to back and 30 emails back to back and make things not working with technology. And so those are the things that still trigger it. And so what we want to do is we want to just breathe. You may have heard someone in your family say, count to 20 before you open your mouth. It's actually 26. It actually takes 26 seconds to make sure that the oxygen is back to that part of your brain so that you can act like a rational human being. And so the science is so important, because when you are able to breathe, to calm yourself down, then you are going to be able to really focus on that competency of interpersonal communications rather than just reacting to whatever your brain is telling you to do.
Thank you. So if we had to develop EQ for somebody in that situation, like you said, where they have to make that split minute decision on whether or not they're going to fight, flee, or freeze, how would I develop that myself?
I would say probably the first thing is just to be aware of what you are feeling every day at work, right? Whether you are working on a pier, whether you're on a ship, whatever it is, and just notice, how are you feeling? Are you angry? Are you sad? Are you hungry? Are you hangry? We just go from back to back to back, and we don't give ourselves time to notice what's going on with us emotionally. And then often, as that expression is, we vomit it out to someone inappropriately. And that's someone who does not have a high EQ and someone who could potentially hurt interpersonal communications and relationships. So I'd say the first thing is just notice what's going on with you, then be able to name it, and then be able to do that breathing part I talked about to calm yourself down before you say something. The expression I always say is, buy yourself 26 seconds, Jeffrey. I don't care if it's you go get yourself a glass of water, if you take a bio break, if you just step outside for a second, but buy yourself 26 seconds so that you can really strengthen this competency of interpersonal communications.
So if I had to ask you one last question, I think for me, I ask myself when I'm learning new things, what's in it for me? Why would I, as an individual employee, want to be able to build interpersonal communications as a competency?
So there's two reasons. The first is it is a life skill in terms of managing family relations, family dynamics, community, neighbor, those types of things. So it's a life skill that we all can benefit from. I would say specifically for this competency as well, is it will help people move on their career trajectory for mission accomplishment. So no matter where you are, what you're doing, if you're in Guam or Port Hueneme or Norfolk, wherever you are, being able to manage your emotions and have effective interpersonal communications will help your career trajectory.
Thank you for all of that information. You have been able to share a lot of these insights and answer questions that I think most people would be asking when they listen to this podcast. But I know everybody is very, very busy, and we don't have a lot of time to record these and have everybody sit and listen. So let's say this is the closing for now until we have our next podcast, but this would conclude our podcast on interpersonal communications. And again, this is part of the Career Compass Employee Development Series, and there will be more features, podcasts, and webinars released as we move forward in our program. Thank you so much for joining us. And if you have any questions or comments that you would like to share, please email them to careercompass, CareerCompass at center, CenterForHCI.org. Again, that's Career Compass, Center for Human Capital Innovation. And we thank you for your participation and your advanced feedback.